Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. Today's episode is with Alison Leggett. Alice is a superstar young saxophonist living in London. She regularly performs in venues such as the Vortex, Ronnie Scott's and the Concellabar. Since graduating from Trinity Conservatoire, Alice has already made her mark on the London jazz scene in a very short space of time and is currently playing in the famed Callum Gawley's monthly big band residency at the Vortex. But without ruining the entire story for you, let's talk to Alice. Alice Leggett, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Hello. Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. All good. No, I was just saying, just got back from a festival a couple of days ago, so still recovering somewhat, but I'm getting there.
Nice. What was the track that you sent with your quartet with Callum Gawley, Rick Simpson, Will Glazer? Because I just played it.
Okay, wicked. Yeah, that was, so I did a gig at Ronnie Scott's recently, just a late show there. Mm-hmm. And that was, just a little clip of one of my tunes called One Way Leggett.
Nice.
Which I guess the kind of like, I mean, if anyone's interested, but like the story behind that, I've kind of had a habit recently of driving down one-way streets.
But the wrong way.
The wrong way, exactly. And it's quite funny. So where Rick lives, his is a one-way street, and we're having a rehearsal there, and the guys were just standing outside the house, and then I just, like, drive straight past going the wrong way, and they were like, no, like, no. So I guess it was sort of, after that a bit.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So you are a saxophone player.
I am, indeed.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, let's talk. So, what made you decide that the saxophone was the one for you?
I started piano when I was quite young. I think maybe like when I was like 5 or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
And I did really enjoy it, and I think I've always been kind of interested in music. And then I think I just sort of lost interest a bit. And I think, I don't know, I think it was because everyone in my school sort of played piano. I think that's quite like the obvious thing for a younger child to play, you know.
Yeah.
It's easier, not easier in terms of ability, but logistically and all that, you know.
Yeah, not the sound is made for you. That's a start.
Exactly, yeah. And then, kind of stopped those lessons because I wasn't really practicing and all that. So my mum was like, well, you know, let's not bother. But I still wanted to play an instrument. Mm-hmm. I think I tried the violin and didn't like that because obviously beginner violin is not the nicest thing to be attracted to. And then, I think I don't know why, but I just said to my mum that I wanted to play the saxophone. And to be honest, I think it was because it was just big and shiny and no one else played it.
Nice.
Yeah. And she had, my mum's a cropodist, and she had a patient who is the saxophone teacher at my school, who also taught clarinet. So she spoke to him.
What does a cropodist do?
She does feet. So she's going to hate me for saying this, but like all the gross side to feet things.
I didn't know there was a good side to feet.
Yeah, maybe not. I think everyone always thinks it's like, oh, doing a nice massage, but it's all like, you know, the cutting the nails, getting rid of hard skin and all that, you know.
Yeah.
Spiel and stuff. So cool. Yeah. Yeah. So so I started playing saxophone when I was 7, and my saxophone teacher hadn't taught anyone that young, so he was a bit skeptical at first, but my mum was like, oh, she's got big hands, so it's fine. So
great.
Yeah,
so that your teacher accepted you on the grounds that you have big hands.
I don't even think, I hope I don't have big hands.
Such a good start.
I know, right? Yeah, but yeah, I tried it out and it was, yeah, I really liked it and kind of went from there, really.
Where were you growing up?
So I grew up in Cardiff, and I was born in Cardiff as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, interesting, because you don't have a very strong accent.
I mean, everyone always says this, and I think probably after, I don't know, a couple of glasses of wine.
Ooh,
probably
get, I like, more Welsh. That.
Yeah.
Start to get a little aggressive and...
Yeah. the sassy Welsh side comes out, as lots of people have probably witnessed. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Where did you go to school?
As in music college or general?
Just in general, yeah.
So I went to school, I went to an all-girls school in Cardiff called Howell School, which, yeah, wasn't my favourite place.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a bit of an academic school, which wasn't really my bag.
Yeah.
But I think the nice thing they had... is really bizarre. They had like a really good music department in the sense of what was it, like, equipment. So they have really good like practice rooms, and they were soundproofed.
Yeah.
Which is like better than music college, which is a bit bizarre. So I enjoyed that side of it. And I left there for sixth form and I went to a comprehensive then. So it was nice to get the mixture of things. So
at what point did you decide that to go, because you studied at Trinity.
Yeah, I did.
When did you decide that that would be the thing for you, or that you wanted to be a jazz musician?
I think, well, I kind of got into jazz when I was about 13. Well, I would say I got a bit more focused and seriously into jazz probably when I was about 13 or 14 years old.
Right.
Do
you remember what music it was that really like drew you in?
I think initially growing up, I listened to a lot of Motown stuff and like Ray Charles,
yeah,
and like all that kind of thing, Stevie Wonder. So I kind of was always, even if I wasn't listening to strictly jazz stuff, I was always listening to things that like had improvisation and more, you know, groove based things.
Yeah.
And then, and then when I was about 14, I did, it was like a 3-day summer, you know, school thing. It was free, actually, at the Royal Welsh College Music and Drama.
Right.
And I think that was my first kind of experience of, like, playing, like, a jazz ensemble, that kind of thing, really.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah, and it was great. I met, like, quite a few people there. So I met some students that were going to study that year. So they were like about 4 or 5 years older than me, and I kind of just latched on to them a bit, and I think, yeah, it just kind of happened, really. I think
that sounds very I kind of like, you know, jazz seems like a lot of people seem to get into it that way, by sort of just not thinking too far ahead until it's too late.
Yeah. Until it's too late. I mean, I think I just really loved the like freedom and the expression of it, I think. And I mean, as well, playing the saxophone naturally, it's not lent massively to classical music. I don't know, I might get controversial.
Well, I did a contemporary classical saxophone degree. So,
okay. Yeah, how did you find that?
Again, I mean, I might incur more wrath than you do here, because I'm going to be more specific in my criticism.
Yeah.
It's not a criticism, but the thing I found about it was I spent a lot of years studying it.
Mm.
And by like the 12th year, I felt like I just, so much of the repertoire I'd seen so many times. You'd had so many people play it. There's such a small amount of music compared to like the clarinet, you know, for instance. Such a small amount of music. And a lot of it then, a lot of stuff is written for like flute and saxophone, oboe and saxophone. Yeah, I don't know.
It's never like strictly saxophone. It's always, yeah.
Yeah, and then of course, with jazz, you've got an art form where the saxophone and jazz music kind of developed at the same time together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then along those lines, in a less offensive way, I remember sort of having a chat with my saxophone teacher, Rob Buckland, about Chris Potter. And Rob's like a, you know, contemporary saxophone player. But he was saying to me, you know, that beyond any doubt that Chris Potter's the greatest living saxophone player, greatest technique of any saxophone player. And for me, that also kind of did it, that like, if there was someone similar to Chris in the contemporary world who would like melt my brain to that degree, maybe it would be different. But he can do literally anything.
He can't he? Bit of a monster. Yeah.
Yes, a monster. I like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So yeah, it's more. I don't know. I don't really want to start a huge debate about this. Maybe I should start a Twitter poll about that. Okay. You know, I'd love to know a percentage of saxophone players in the world that have played that are more focused on jazz or on contemporary. Be very interesting.
Yeah, because I think we like the classical side of it. It's like, I mean, I'll every now and again go through phases of like doing some classical studies, just, you know, for like more technique side of you and kind of thing. But I can't say I'm someone that knows a lot about that kind of thing. So I don't really want to comment in case I say something very stupid.
Well, when I first came to London, I always thought like, right, I've done 12 years of contemporary classical saxophone. If nothing else, I'll be a much better sight reader. I'll have much better technique. I'll be able to play way faster than everyone else. Like, I think the first saxophone player I heard in London was Nadeem Tamori, and I was like, oh, no!
Yeah, that's going to be someone that's going to...
It was horrible. All of my hopes and dreams went out the window. I was like, oh, no, he can play faster than me and higher than me, and he seems to be able to sight read perfectly well.
I know, and he's a really nice guy as well. It's just like, all the boxes being ticked, isn't it?
Yes, that's a good way to put it. A nice, I remember it was a Peter Whittingham audition, and I was stood outside with my band, and I could hear Nadeem inside, and I was like, oh no.
Oh, bless.
Anyway, when did you move to London?
So I moved to London... I think I'm on my fifth year now, so I finished because I took a year out before starting college.
Why did you take that year out other than to chill?
I just go out drinking in Cardiff. Yeah. No, no.
And get sassy with the locals.
Yeah. Well, basically, I applied for Academy, Trinity, and Guildhall. And I didn't actually get into any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a forced gap year. But you know what? In hindsight, it was like one of the best things that could have happened to me.
Yeah.
Because, man, I just got so much done in that year. And
how did you... I mean, it's an amazing story, first of all, to start out. You know, it's hard to take that rejection and to go away and channel it and to come back. You know.
It was really... Like, it did actually... it did affect me quite a while, and it did make me question, you know, I guess it was kind of the, I mean, obviously I've had like rejections growing up, but I guess it was the first kind of big rejection. And, you know, it does make you question things.
Did you ever think about doing anything else?
Yeah, well, I did. I had a moment of thinking, or maybe I'll like go more into like the pop side of things.
Yeah.
Not necessarily playing saxophone, but like writing music. And I did apply for Goldsmiths, maybe to do that. But I think that was just a very much like a bit of a panic. God, you know, what am I doing? Should I be doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And I think that lasted for like a few months. And I was like, nah, I like jazz. I'm going to carry on with this.
Yeah.
And in terms of like, taking a year out. So I end, in terms of what I did, if anyone's interested.
Definitely.
So I, at the beginning of my year out, so when I just finished school, I did this Siena Jazz Summer School. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, I haven't.
So, yeah, it's this two-week summer school in Italy, in Siena.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, basically the tutors are some really heavy guys. So you have, so your first week, you have basically have a mixture of like American or international tutors and a mixture of Italian ones, more local. And they change, the tutors change each week. So I guess in terms of some of the teachers I had, it was like Miguel Zenon, Greg Osby, Joel Frum, I was like Jeff Ballard, Ben Street, John Taylor, all of the,
yeah,
big guys. And yeah, that was yeah, just incredible. I still like pinpoint that as like the most inspiring few weeks of my life, really. Yeah, because it's just great. You just get, you spend 2 weeks hanging out in Italy in the summer.
Yeah.
Just like with these tutors, you have like instrument lessons with them in a small group. You have ensemble lessons. And yeah, and then you just get to hang out and chat with them and see them play. And there's jam sessions. And it's just, and you meet so many different people as well, like in terms of the students, you know. Yeah, yeah, it was just incredible. And then they offer at the end of that, at the end of the 2 weeks, they offer like a few scholarships. So I then got offered a scholarship to come back the next year.
Oh, cool.
As well. Yeah. So I ended up doing the course at the beginning of my gap year and at the end of it as well. So yeah, it kind of worked out really well, I think. So yeah.
That's a great sort of accidental structure to it.
Yeah.
And then, so was it a case of that they'd given you, did you have lessons through this gap year, or were you just working on stuff that you covered on that course?
Yeah, like a mixture. So, yeah, I spent like the year like working on stuff that those teachers gave me. I think I went up to London a few times. I had lessons from, I mean, usually if like, kind of what I did a lot when I was living in Cardiff, if guys from London were coming down to play, I would like grab a lesson of them, have like a one-off one.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when I was like younger, I had a lesson with like Mike Chillingworth. I don't know how old I was then. We still like joke about it now, just like, because it's quite funny because I do like Callum's big band with him.
Yeah.
Sit next to each other, and it was quite funny. You know, it was like when I was like 15 or something, I was having a lesson with him. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, it seems to have had like turned out that way a lot with people. I had a couple of lessons with Josh Arkelow as well, which is the same situation. I do Callum's big band with him as yeah, so I've just kind of just like whoever is about, and you know, if people were visiting, I'll just that kind of thing, really.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, and I think as well, like, to be honest, I think everyone should take a year out before going to college, because I think the amount you can grow as a person just from having to be independent in terms of your work ethic.
Especially for a music course where you're going to be expected to do an overwhelming amount of the work on your own every day.
Exactly. And I think as well, you know, it's like in college, you are like practicing, you are working on your own, but you're also given a lot of the work. You're also told what to practice.
Yeah. This is what really impresses me about this gap year, because it's really hard to learn to play jazz. It's because there's no one's going to be like, just do this and you'll be fine. Because
it's
so open. It's such a difficult art form. I struggled with that for years,
which
is why I never did a jazz course when I was 18 years old. I just couldn't hack the sense of lack of structure. I just wanted to like, but which way's forwards, please?
I know, exactly. I think that's why at a younger age, it's really important to kind of get into that mindset. Because, you know, I spent like that year just getting into like a really good routine of just like, but like you said, because it is hard to form a structure, but actually you can develop a really structured practice routine and then just build within that structure, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is, it is really hard to think, what do I work on? But so, yeah, I found even just having that year doing that, it kind of like sets you up a bit more. Mm-hmm. And and just having that independence as well, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Must have felt great then to come back, re-audition, get a place at Trinity, and then get on the course.
Yeah, it was a bit bizarre actually, because I don't know how to kind of put this. I kind of always hung out with like older people growing up, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, it was like when I was like 14, I was like hanging out with the university students at the Welsh College. So I guess, you know, and I would be going to Dempsey's. I don't know if you heard of that venue in Cardiff. Yeah, with just like legendary Cardiff jazz venue run by Brenda and Alistair. And, you know, it'd be amazing that you just get all these London guys coming down. And, you know, I used to remember sometimes when I was in like sixth form, my mum's listening now. Actually, she didn't encourage this, so, you know, she can't complain. but like going to gigs on like a Monday or Tuesday, watching the gig, hanging out in Cardiff, then hanging out at like a student's house or something. And then I would go straight to college on the bus from there. I know it's quite bad. I can't do that anymore. I'm getting old.
Yeah, exactly. You're feeling it now.
Yeah, I think I peaked early with that. But you know, it's because I think I ordered like another copy of my sister's ID.
Yeah.
So I could go out when I was younger. So drinking with older people. So yeah, back to the point, I think it was like when I kind of got to college, and especially after taking a year out, and you know, a lot of people have come straight from school, I did find it quite challenging to kind of gel with the people.
I know exactly what you mean, because I felt like that. I'm going to make some presumptions here, that when you arrived at Trinity on a gap year, you were ready to work, and everyone else in your years like found their freedom for the first time.
Yeah, like people who have never, like,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I was up for that, but I was kind of like, you know, I'd want to go to a lot of gigs, and maybe people weren't aware of some of these gigs, and they weren't that out for going. And I used to find it a bit, you know, frustrating. So I guess my kind of lot, like, obviously I got a lot out of college, but my kind of growth, I think, came from just spending a lot of time just on with people on the scene in London, you know, that kind of thing. So
So what's going on now in life?
So now in life, so I finished college, I guess this time last year.
Yeah.
So being out of college a year.
How have you found this first year exploring the world?
I've loved it. It's been great. Because I was kind of worried that, like, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to make money and, you know, try and live, blah, 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 and I'm not going to have time to practice. And you know what? I've actually found I've had like way more time to practice than I did in college.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't expecting at all. So, you know, I feel like super focused, which is great. And yeah, and I guess my main thing is just, I've just got my band together with Rick Simpson, Callum Gawley and Will Glazer. So kind of at the beginnings of that, writing music, just trying to sort out some gigs and seeing where that goes, I think.
Do you have a band name for our listeners to be able to Google?
It's just the Alice Leggett Quartet. I know, so original, isn't it? Classic jazz, you know, lack of name. But I think maybe at some point, if it develops, I should think of that. But at the moment, no, just the Alice Leggett Quartet.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I know what I wanted to ask you. Why the alto sax specifically? What is it about the alto that makes that the one for you?
I love the sound. I mean, I love the tenor, and I'm playing a little bit more tenor now, but I think on the alto, I can hear how I want to sound.
Yeah.
In terms of like tone and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think tenor, I'm still a bit uncertain of what I want to go for, but alto, you know, I'm really kind of sure of what my sound wants to, how much sound should be at this time anyway. And I just think when the alto is played really well and has a really beautiful tone, it's just such a great instrument. There's so many things you can do with it, you know. So, I think it's just about the sound, I think, you know. I don't know if that
Yeah, no, that sounds about not that there's a wrong answer.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Oh, damn it, I've answered wrong.
Yeah, you failed that question. No. Moving on. Who are your favourite saxophone players?
Ooh. So, I mean, there's all, like, the obvious, you know, more traditional ones, like Coltrane, Michael Brecker, Konitz, Parker, Art Pepper, you know, all those.
Do you prefer listening to alto players? Or do you not even, does that not register in your brain?
It's a mixture. I mean, quite a lot of my favourite players are tenor players, but then there's, like, a few alto players, obviously. I think it's just a mixture.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of, like, modern alto players, like, Miguel Zanon is, like, a really big influence for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his, yet again, down to, like, the sound, there's just so much, like, emotion and, yeah, it's incredible. Ben van Gelder, or as the Dutch say, Ben van Helder, or however you say it.
Yeah.
he's amazing. Greg Osby, Steve Lehman, you know, in terms of alto players, I guess tenor players, like Chris Cheek is a really big influence of mine. I managed to get a lesson with him when I was like 16 in New York.
Sweet, that's incredible.
Yeah, so that was like, yeah, that was incredible. And he taught me a lot about sound, you know, because he's got such a unique sound as well. So kind of like, yeah, just I still work on all that stuff. Same with like Miguel Zanon, he's like, you know, massive advocate. I mean, all these guys are about like having a good sound, but still practice all those things that those guys gave me. Yeah, like, I don't know, I said Joe Lovano, big influence of mine, Tony Malaby, Mark Turner, yeah, all those guys.
You ever heard an alto player called Justin Vasquez?
No, I haven't. What's his
band? I'll just send it to you. It's just someone, I'm not very good with like modern alto players, frankly. Loads of the people that you've just said, I'm just going to write all their names down and go away.
Oh man,
this is my only contribution to the conversation, because James.
I'm sure there's a problem with that.
James Gardner Bateman played me some in class once, because he just came back from New York and he just discovered this guy. He'd gone through this funny little phase where he'd gone to New York and he was cooking for the Lincoln Center band for a couple of months.
What, Bateman was?
Yeah.
Really? Do you say cooking as in like making food?
Like food, yeah.
What? I didn't know that. That's mental.
Yeah, I know. Serious. Yeah, that's what the trip was. I think in my imagination, it's become that he spent 3 months there. And he just, like, got in with these guys and they loved the way he cooked and he'd just make them, you know. Now, all of that might not be true. But that's how I remember it. But I remember that two things came out of that trip. One was that's what he'd been doing, and the other was that he'd become obsessed with this guy, Justin Vasquez. An alto player. Anyway, and I've listened to some of it. But, yeah, it's really cool. I'd be curious to know what you think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about... Hey, whereabouts in London do you live?
I'm northwest. Could you hear the sirens?
Yeah, I could. That's what made me think to ask.
I'm in Harlesden, you know, as well.
Oh, that's where I first lived in London. That was my first house.
Yeah, loads of guys used to live around here. I think Callum used to live around here and all, you know, that kind of... Yeah. Northwest, so yeah, it's got character.
Yeah,
it's got its perks and perks, but you know, I like it.
what made you decide to live in Harlesden?
Well, to be honest, I'd always lived in East London actually, and then I was just in a situation where I needed to find a new place, and a couple of my friends, two guys that I live with now, had a room going, and so I thought, okay, why not? You know, and it works out quite well. I got a nice big room, got my own bathroom, got a driveway. So
amazing.
Works out quite well. Got my flat here as well. Yeah,
exactly. I lived in Harlesden because it was 90 quid a week, the rent.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it was worth about 90 quid a week.
We had
both mice and rats in the house at the same time. I lived with Reuben Fowler. It was a John Ormston and John Cervantes, and just sounded like a great idea. But in practice, and I remember John's wife, Kirsty, had like named each rat and could tell them apart because of how much time we were spending with them.
Oh, that's so funny. I'm the kind of person, I'm like, obviously, you know, rats and mice aren't good to have, but I'm the kind of person, if I see a mouse, I'm just like, oh, I just want to make friends with it, or like feed it. I'm like that, like, mental person with animals.
That's hilarious. So, oh, no, oh man.
Not good.
I went through a phase with Ruben where he was having a less organized time of his life, and was eating, like, he'd come home and eat everything in the house. So I started putting I was living upstairs in my room, you know, I put a loaf of bread on the floor every night.
Right.
Just because I knew it would be there in the morning, I could make some toast, whatever.
Okay.
And one night I woke up because I could hear like the sound of nibbling, you know, of a mouse. And I like flicked my iPhone 3GS on to see if I could see anything. And I lay down again, and then I could hear this sound again. So I like sprang out of bed and I heard the mouse like leg it. I picked up the bread, and you could look through it like a telescope from one end. Made a whole tunnel through it and eaten the entire way through, eaten through the plastic. And then I found the mouse hole under my bed where they were coming in to the room.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I remembered like going on to BBC Sport, and the Tokyo Marathon was on live. So I sat and watched it for maybe 4 or 5 hours. That was a lot of time to think about my life and how I could make some changes.
Do you reckon it was actually the rats that were like the landlords, and they were the ones that were taking like 90 quid a week, you know?
Big time. The rats were huge.
Yeah.
And the mice were tiny by comparison. So I do think that there was something going on.
Yeah. Some kind of deal, you know?
Yeah. The landlord and the rat. A rat discount.
Yeah.
They were very reasonable on the cost.
Oh, so
tell us about your hobbies away from the horn.
Ooh, hobbies. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Bateman cooking. I love cooking. I think I'm definitely one that posts a lot of food posts on Instagram and all that, so, which a lot of people have seen.
Okay, what are your favourite things to cook? What's your favourite, like, nations for food?
Well, so I'm vegan, so I thought I'd just get that out of the way with,
that
elephant in the room. I think in terms of a lot of things I cook, a lot of curries, you know, because I think vegan food lends itself to that a lot.
Yeah.
In themselves, you know, like a lot of Asian food and Indian food.
A lot of like traditional Indian food is...
It's just vegan anyway.
Yeah. Chickpeas.
Yeah, exactly.
Throw that out there.
Yeah, all the chickpeas. I love just making like curries from scratch, you know, making the pastes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had some friends that went to India and brought me back some really nice like curry powder and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I like making, you know, Indian curries, Thai curries as well. And I like making just like a really nice tomato pasta sauce.
Yeah.
You know, like just get hold of some really good tomatoes. And you just don't need to mess around with it at all.
I don't think I've ever really done that. I feel like that's a big part of my life that I need to get covered.
Oh, it's great. Because all you do, it's like, if you get hold of, like, I mean, obviously in Britain, there's only going to be so much good quality tomatoes. But, you know, if you're ever like in Italy or whatever, just get hold of some really good tomatoes. All you just need to do is just cook them with just loads of olive oil, salt, and you don't even need to add sugar because they're so naturally sweet.
Yeah.
But maybe over here you do with some of them. And yeah, just make a really nice, simple tomato sauce. Yeah, it's great.
That's on my bucket list.
Yeah, do it. And you that's like all you're going to eat then.
Incredible. So what else?
I've really got into running recently.
Ooh, lovely.
So I just got back from a run, actually, like half an hour ago.
Oh, nice work. How far did you run?
Oh, it was only a short one. I did 20 minutes. I'm just trying to do it more often at the moment. So like maybe like shorter distances, but
that's great. That's such a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah. So I'd be trying to go for like 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And doing between like, I don't know, 20 to 40 minute runs, depending, you know. But yeah, I just find it so great to do, because, you know, it's like, I think especially as musicians, we spend a lot of time on our own, a lot of time sitting down practicing and drinking a lot, you know.
And if you're if you're on the road, you're gonna eat, it's hard to eat well.
Exactly. So it's like, naturally our lifestyles cannot be the healthiest, you know. And as well, like, that affects us mentally, do you know what I mean? So if physically you're not having a healthy lifestyle, that affects the mind, I think. So I just find, you know, going for a run every day, even if it is just like 20 minutes, it just like clears your mind. Totally. It gives you like some kind of structure to your day as well, I think. Because I find if, you know, it's like, I think especially for the summer, for me at the moment, it's like when I like don't have, I mean, I only do like a day and a half teaching at the moment, but like saying having no teaching. Yeah. So you've got a lot of like just open free days.
Yeah.
So you think, well, obviously it's great because you're like, right, I can practice. But then you think, I'm in all day, I'm practicing. You know, it's something to kind of, I don't know, just break up your day a bit and totally. Be active. And just being outside as well, I think that's just a really nice thing.
You're right, for mental health, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And I was going to say, and in terms of just having like goals to work towards, it's like I did a 10K, just like a park run. Like, yeah. I don't know, like a few months ago, just having that is like, right, I need to train for that. Yeah. So that's gonna be my goal, and achieving it, you're like, cool, great, that's nice. Now I'm gonna do something else. So yeah, so I quite like running, getting into that. Yeah. And I'm trying to think what other hobbies, like animals, is that a hobby?
Good. That's a lovely thing. Yeah.
yeah I just like animals, outdoorsy things.
Yeah.
Looking, yeah. And then I think I just hanging out with my pals.
Yeah.
And going out, gigs, drinking, mm-hmm. all the usual.
So where, have you got anything coming up with your band?
Yeah, so on the 15th of August, I'm playing at the Vortex with my band.
Oh, great.
That's in what? That's like in a week now,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
Really soon. Is that next Wednesday?
Yes, it is. So, yeah, doing that, that should be nice, because most of the gigs I've done recently with them has only been one set.
Yes.
You know, like I did a gig at the Conceller, and then, you know, Ronnie Scott's Late Show, they're all like one set. So this is going to be two sets. So, you know, we can do some, add some more music.
Yeah.
You know, mix it up a bit. I think I've got another gig with the same, with those guys in Cardiff. This is Night in Cafe Jazz called Hackensack.
Oh, great.
That's like next year. It was just quite funny, actually. Like, last year, it was like a bit of, or this year, a bit of an ongoing joke that I had so many gigs cancelled.
Oh, no.
With it. So I was like, trying to get this band going. And I think the initial one was, it was like supposed to be like last August, maybe this time last year at the con. I was supposed to have a gig, and then I had some like housing problems, and I was just basically living on the M4 going back to Cardiff and all that. So I was just like, it's quite hard to write music and practice when you're driving, you know. All that kind of thing. So I had to postpone that. Then that got rearranged, and then that gig got double booked, and then I was supposed to have a gig in Cardiff. And then that got cancelled because of the snow. And then another gig that got rearranged, I don't know, some people couldn't do it. So it took like 5-6 times to get this gig.
Yeah.
So it's just this ongoing joke where I was like, right, I've got this gig. And people are like, is it going to happen? I'm like, I was just getting to the stage. I'm like, it, you know, it's like knowing my luck, it'll just be like the apocalypse that day. And
yeah.
You know, just that kind of thing. But it's going okay at the moment. The gigs Excellent. Are actually happening.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so, yeah, I've got a few things with that. Playing Callum's Big Band, that's a regular thing.
That's Callum Gourlay's monthly Vortex
residency. Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, and that's really great
to
play, and I'm really happy that I get to do that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know, have you been down? Have you checked out at all?
No, it was the very first thing we ever talked about when we did the Jazz Podcast News. Like,
okay.
Like, 19, 20 months ago now.
Yeah.
So I love that it's kind of been going about the same time we have.
About like just but yeah, like a year and a half, isn't it?
Yeah, I live in Southwest London in Sunbury. Okay. The vortex is like, it may as well be in Scotland.
Well, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. But no.
I love it there so much, but I hardly ever go. It's just so damn far away.
Yeah, but that's great because I think the thing I love about that band, it's not necessarily, you know, you get like some jazz musicians that generally play more big band music and that's their thing.
Yeah.
It's quite nice with this band that you don't have those kind of players.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, I'm not like to, not saying that it is a negative thing to play big band stuff. Like, that's great, but it can be quite interesting, you know, getting like more the other players doing big band music. It kind of has like a different take on it.
Yeah.
You know, because you get like Madron doing it. You know, like Mike Chinworth, Josh Occhio, James Copus, Rick, Tom Crawley. Yeah, all those guys, and it's just like, and James Allsop. On Barry, like, man, if ever you get a chance to check him out on that big band set, it's just, I sit next to him on that and I think each time I'm just still like, my mind is absolutely blown every time he plays. Yeah, it's that's ridiculous.
So cool.
Yeah, so yeah, that's definitely worth checking out. And yeah, just bits and bobs really.
Sweet. Well, Alice, thanks so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast.
No, thank you so much for asking me.
We've had a blast.
Yeah.
And our lovely listeners can check you out all over town.
Mm, yeah, and probably I've got progressively more Welsh during this session. I'm quite interested to hear that. At the beginning, it's like, no, Alice, yes, pleasure to meet you. And at the end, it's like, oh, thanks, Rob. Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure.
Excellent. Oh, that's, a wonderful feature of this interview.
Yes.
Well...
there's like another project that I've been part of that's probably worth mentioning.
Oh, yeah, go for it. Please do.
I was part of a project with Mark Lockhart. It's like this orchestral thing.
Oh, and cool.
So he just recorded an album, and that's with, so it's like with some session guys, just full orchestra. And then it's with like John Paricelli, Liam Noble, Seb Rochford and Tom Herbert. So that's going to be out soon as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, as to when and what label. I think it's Edition maybe, but not exactly sure. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, we look forward to hearing that.
Wicked.
Well, I do. there's like a whole team here. Yeah, totally. Awesome. All right. This is it. Thank you, Alice. We'll be back on a Friday very soon, probably next week.
Cool.
Awesome.
Right.
Thank you so much. Bye.